Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. Court has three causes on its oral submission docket this morning. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston versus Robert York as guardian of Richard Allen York from Galveston County. Stephen F. Maffridge and others versus James E. Ross and J. Douglas Sutter from Harris County. And Harris County versus Michael Curtis Dillard and others from Harris County. In each of these causes, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present argument. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of the court. That portion may not exceed half of the allotted time. We will take a recess in between each of the presentations of these oral arguments. These arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to a tape of the argument, you may make application with the clerk of our court. The court is now ready to hear from petitioner in UT Medical Branch versus York.
May it please the court, Mr. Mark Holbrook will present argument for petitioner. Mr. Holbrook has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Holbrook and I represent the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, the petitioner in this case. This is a medical malpractice case in which the plaintiffs allege that the defendant was negligent through the use of the patient's medical records in failing to diagnose a hip fracture. The plaintiffs in this case have waived an essential element of their cause of action under the Texas Tort Claims Act and under this court's opinion in Mount Pleasant versus Lindbergh. This is a tort claims case. The medical branch is a tort claims hospital. The plaintiffs in a tort claims case must prove under this particular waiver provision that there was a use of tangible personal property. This is a failure to diagnose case. This is a situation in which a doctor went in and examined a gentleman to see if he had a fractured hip. The doctor examined the gentleman on several different occasions. On each occasion, the doctor did not diagnose the hip. And on each occasion, the plaintiff failed to present evidence that there was a use of this man's medical records and this man's patient chart in this examination.
There is handwriting by this doctor on the chart.
There is handwriting by the doctor.
It's on the same page with writing by a nurse.
That's correct.
Which would indicate that other treatment should be undertaken other than what was undertaken.
Well, the handwriting doesn't indicate that the doctor reviewed the notes. But the plaintiffs allege in this case that the doctor failed to diagnose because the doctor failed to review the notes and misread the notes, or that the notes were inadequate and there were missing entries. But there's no evidence in this case to indicate that the doctor used these records in the examination and diagnosis
what
of
the
patient.
What are the records there for?
Well, the records are there to keep a history of the patient.
Why have a history of the patient?
To follow the patient's care.
Why? Why, if nobody's going to read them or use them, why have them?
Well, I understand that, and I understand the distinction that you're making.
Well, you're saying the doctor, presumably the attending physician who would be charged with the care of this patient, never used them. Well, a non-use can be a misuse if he should have used them. If it's practice to use them, if you use them in diagnosis and keeping a history of the patient's care, it doesn't seem to me you care about whether there was a history of the patient's care unless it had some value in treatment.
Well, that's the other point, though, Your Honor, is that not only did they not prove that there was a use of the records by the evidence or by the doctor, but they also did not prove that the standard of care required a use.
Now, they may have failed in that, but a non-use can be a misuse.
I agree. A non-use can be a misuse if, in fact, the standard of care requires the doctor use the records.
Counsel, the issue here is the discovery of the broken hip, is it not?
Yes, sir.
And you're saying that there was nothing in the records, no matter how he used them or misused them, that would have helped in the discovery of the broken hip.
The doctor saw this patient on 5 different occasions. There's nothing in
the
records.
The doctor may not have done the physical examination with his hands to determine that the hip was broken, but there was nothing in the records to show the hip was broken, was it?
That's correct. There's nothing in the records that shows
that. So you're saying that no matter what was done with the records, that wouldn't have discovered the broken hip?
That's correct. I'm saying this is a classic, classic non-use case. It's a classic failure to diagnose case, which only involves...
But even if he had used them, would that have helped him discover the broken hip?
If he had used the records, the only thing that he would have seen in those records, Your Honor, is the same thing that he was seeing right there in front of him.
The doctor was a she, right?
It was a she. I'm sorry. It was Dr. Milner, and it was a woman. And had Dr. Milner, at the standard of care shown that Dr. Milner commonly goes in, reviews patient's charts, and then goes over to patients and hands-on examines them, the only thing the patient's chart said, pain and swelling, pain when you move the hip, redness of the right trochanter.
Did the chart say pain when you move the hip?
I believe that it did. I believe that the physical therapist indicated there was some pain when they moved his
swelling, body. Discoloration.
Swelling, discoloration, redness, yes, sir.
Pain, groaning.
Face sounds a little like Opal Petty, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't, because Opal Petty, the evidence was that the records were used. The evidence was that the records contained all of these tests and things that they did and all of the things they did in following along Ms. Petty and the reason they kept her in there, and they would have these big meetings and they would all sit around.
What the records indicated in Petty was that they didn't follow an indicated course of treatment, if there was one, or a lack of necessity of treatment. They did not follow what the records show. They misused them.
That's
they
right.
Ignored the records.
But the key to that is the plaintiffs in Petty proved the threshold requirement that they use the records. And that's what's different here. There's no threshold proof that the records in this case were used.
But should they have been used?
There's no threshold proof, again, that they should have
here
been used.
Again, a non-use may be a misuse. The question is whether they should have been used. And if they failed in that element of proof, that's a whole different question.
Well, there was no evidence to show that the records should have been used.
Yeah,
no expert got on the stand.
Mr. Holbrook, do I understand your position conceding that a non-use could be a use, although it's hard for me to get around that concept, but conceding that a non-use could be a use, what you're saying is there's no evidence in this record anything that should have been used. There's nothing in the record by the plaintiff that establishes that this doctor should have looked at this record.
That's correct.
And consequently, even conceding a non-use could be a use, they fail to establish that it should have been used.
That's correct. That's correct.
Now, let me see if I'm clear on this. It wasn't what was in the record. If it wasn't used, it doesn't make any difference what was in it.
That's correct.
It wasn't what was in the record. The question is it standard medical practice to keep a patient's history? And if it's standard medical practice to keep a patient's history, of what use is that medical history in the course of treatment? Is it relied upon in the course of treatment? Is it used to indicate a course of treatment? Here you had fever, swelling, discoloration, obvious pain over a protracted period of time by a person who could not communicate well because of other disabilities. In constant care, 24-hour care in a hospital situation, there were notations, perhaps inadequate notations, as to the course of this injury. But the doctor in that medical hospital setting who is charged with treatment, it is not standard medical practice for that physician to use, read, and rely upon that history?
It was not proven to be standard medical practice to read, review, and rely on that history. This is a medical malpractice case. If this were a garden variety medical malpractice case without any tort claims issues, the plaintiff would have to prove by expert testimony that the standard of care in examining a patient requires the use of the records.
Isn't that the issue we're really dealing with?
That's the issue we're dealing with. Because the property in question, by the plaintiff's own choice in this case, is the medical records. And the plaintiff put on evidence about these medical records, how they were improperly
If it was the standard of care, if it is the standard of care, if there is proof that it is the standard of care to use, read, and rely upon these records, is a failure to do so a violation of standard medical practice? Is it a misuse?
Yes, I would think so.
Thank you.
Is it your contention that had there been no governmental entity involved and this were just an ordinary malpractice case in a private situation, that a directed verdict based on this record would have been appropriate? program? What the defendant is doing?
Yes, I would think so. I think a directed verdict may have been appropriate based on the lack of expert testimony to prove a standard of care, to prove a violation in proximate cause. This case is analogous to Armendariz versus Tarrant County Hospital. In that particular case, the first couple of points of error, the defendants or the plaintiffs alleged that the defendants were negligent in their misuse and misinterpretation of policy and procedure manuals in the hospital. The Fort Worth Court of Appeals overruled that point of error. And when they overruled it, they said this. They said that the plaintiffs had not put on any evidence that the defendants made use of the records. They had not put on any evidence that the defendants had made use of these policy and procedure manuals. Regardless of what they said, regardless of their violation or alleged violation, there was no evidence that they had used those medical records. Therefore, again, they waived an essential element under Mount Pleasant to carry a tort claims case. They haven't proved use, regardless of the causation questions that are raised by Petty and by Salcedo. This case can be decided on a very narrow point of law. This case, in my opinion, is far afield from Salcedo, simply because they can't even get to the causation issue because they haven't reached the threshold of use.
Assuming that the court might address the more fundamental issue of whether paper is tangible personal property under the Tort Claims Act, what's your position on that?
I think that the cases interpreting tangible property seem to indicate that paper evidence, notes that record some sort of a situation are tangible personal property.
So you think that the plurality in Petty was correct, that the use or non-use of paper waives governmental immunity under the Texas Tort Claims Act?
I think in Petty, even you can take the position that tangible personal property is only the type of tangible personal property that you see in Salcedo, namely a graph that records something finite like a heartbeat and records something like that, or a temperature, something along those lines. Whereas an examination, you go in and look at the patient and say, oh, the hip's swollen or whatever, you write that down. There's an argument that maybe that's not tangible property because it's judgment.
Why do you take an electrocardiogram?
Excuse me?
Why do you take an electrocardiogram?
To see what the heart's doing.
You to get a history.
Yes.
To record what's going on in that patient.
Exactly.
So that you can use it, rely on it, and pursue an indicated course of treatment or further diagnosis.
That's true.
You keep a person's physical history or their mental history or any kind of a medical history. That's the purpose, and it's to be used for that purpose. Isn't that correct?
I think
is this any different?
The only reason this is different is because they haven't proved.
Well, I'm not talking about whether or not they prove. Assuming, for purposes of argument, that they did prove that the standard of care is this record any different from records in Salcedo and Petty?
I would say.
If they made that verdict.
I would say probably not.
So they were one question away from your paying this judgment.
One question away from?
From you wouldn't even be here.
I think that's true. Actually, not one question, Judge, but they were one witness away. They never took the deposition of this Dr. Miller. They never, in a tort claims case, they never took Dr. Miller's deposition and asked her what I would consider to be the most important question, which is, Dr. Miller, did you review these records when you went in there and looked at this guy? They never did that. Nor did they ever put an expert on the stand and say, Mr. Expert, what is the standard of care for Dr. Miller when she's in there looking at that patient? And have him testify that the standard of care requires that she review the record and rely upon the entries contained therein.
Counsel, you've provided us a basis for squaring your position here with Petty and with Salcedo. Do you have a problem squaring it with Robinson against MHMR?
I think Robinson versus MHMR is a condition case. I think on its face, Robinson looks like a non-use case. But I think Robinson falls more in... Robinson was based on Lowe, which is a defective condition case. And I think Robinson, the condition being the swimsuit...
Well, Lowe was a defective equipment case.
Exactly.
And Robinson involved a life jacket.
Well, the way... The way I see those is the perfect, it requires a condition or use of tangible personal property. The perfect condition of the uniform was with the knee brace. The uniform was defective without the knee brace. The perfect condition of the swimsuit attire was with the life jacket. The condition was defective without the life jacket. Therefore, I think Robinson is a condition case as opposed to a use case, not a true non-use case like this one is. This is a true non-use case in the sense that it only involves an individual's judgments without any evidence of use of property.
You don't see any distinction between information that's recorded in hard copy as opposed to tangible property used to treat a condition. You don't see any distinction where what is at stake here is the information that's conveyed. There's nothing significant about a piece of paper. The only thing that's significant about a piece of paper is the information it conveys. And you see no issue here in this case that this is just not the use of tangible property. This is simply a case where they didn't prove that they should have used this. They should have read the piece of paper for its information, and having failed to establish that they should have read this piece of paper for information, you win this case. But if we do find there's some evidence here that they should have read this piece of paper, then you can see that tangible property was used in the treatment of this patient and consequent Tort Claims Act.
Well, I think that the tangible property cases seem to divide on whether or not the tangible property contains information that was reported on the basis of an independent judgment type of a situation, as opposed to a machine that records information that's accurate and correct. And I would say that the paper, the product that's recorded as a part of an individual type of a decision would not be tangible property. Because again, that's what we have here. This is a situation where the lady goes in, looks at it, and says, well, in my opinion, doesn't have a broken hand. Now, if she wrote that down, I don't know how the mere recording of it would make that tangible property. If they did an x-ray on them and the x-ray says, look at that broken hip, I certainly think that's tangible. That's something that's there, it's a known, it's a given, and it's recorded by the equipment that can make it a known or a given.
What about objective observations? For instance, the man's there for 24 hours a day. The hip's broken for, what, a week before they finally take an x-ray. They have objective observations that it's inflamed, it's discolored, it's swollen, he's in pain, he won't eat, he's lost his appetite, he audibly complains to the best of his ability, he weeps, he's in obvious agony. Different nurses, different attendants record these objective observations on his chart over an extended period of time. Unless they are there to prescribe or to indicate a course of further diagnosis or medical treatment, it makes no sense to have them recorded at all. It is a tool that they use, every bit as much as a wrench is a tool that a mechanic uses in the repair of a car. Every bit as much as one of those electronic gizmos they put on computerized cars now is a tool. It is tangible property. It is there to be used and relied on, like the electrocardiogram, like the x-ray. These are objective observations to indicate a further diagnosis or course of treatment. The question, back to what you conceded, I think the question was a while ago, is they have not proved through witnesses, through depositions, or what have you. The standard of care requires such reliance. If it did require such reliance, and they proved that it required such reliance, this is sufficient tangible property in order to establish liability of the Tort Claims Act. Isn't that correct?
I think that's true. I think there's enough tangible property in this record, regardless of the individual notes and judgment and whatnot, that would at least meet the tangible property requirement before you could use.
What are you referring to? What tangible personal property are you referring to other than the notes?
Tests, diagnosis, x-rays, those types of things.
If that were enough to waive sovereign immunity under the Texas Tort Claims Act, is there any case that could be brought that where a claimant would not be able to point to some property and say, this was incidentally involved in the in my medical treatment?
Well, I think that's the other problem here. And my argument is sort of double-barreled approach. Well, on the one hand, I think that the case is far afield from Salcedo, one that can be decided on a very narrow point of law. I think on the other hand, this is a perfect case for this court to revisit the issue in Petty and to revisit the problems that Salcedo arose and gave rise to in the Court of Appeals and the bar throughout this state in its opinion that said that property need only be involved. I'm out of time.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument and respond.
Can't please the court. Mr. John Buckley will present argument.
May it please the court, I'd like to visit immediately the issue that's brought up concerning this is a failure to diagnose case. And why was there a failure to diagnose is the first question. And it goes as follows. One, as the Court of Appeals wrote, there was a failure to document all the things that the parents were telling these folks. If they came in, they found him slumped over in the chair. They found him crying in pain. They found a support missing from his wheelchair. Most of those are not in the record. That's what the Court of Appeals focused on. In addition to that, you have a missing documentation. Dr. Evans, UTMB's doctor, testified, yeah, we're supposed to have documentation in that file. So what about this 28-hour gap in the records? Shouldn't there have been something for that period of time? His answer, yes, there should have been. And that is the period of time when this fractured, when his hip was broken. Their own rules say if you have a traumatic event, a fall, a break during manual manipulation of the limb, you're supposed to document that in the file. Wasn't done here. They also have their own rules that talk about when you're dealing with aphasics, people who are not able to articulate very well. It's all the more important to document this type of event.
Counsel, is there any evidence that those matters were recorded in that 28-hour period and the documentation was mislaid or lost?
There is no evidence at all as to what happened during that 28-hour period to the record. We don't know whether they were kept. We don't know if they were kept or lost.
There was no testimony by the attending nurses or anyone during that period of time?
Correct, Your Honor.
So we don't know whether there was any documentation missing or not. We just know that there's a gap in the record.
But I think the jury and this court should reasonably infer from Dr. Evans' testimony, the UTMB physician, that there should have been documentation for that period of time.
Well, people sometimes should do things they don't do. So there's no positive evidence that there was a record made at all. There's no missing papers. There's just a time gap in the recorded record.
Correct.
Why have the record?
The record is there as their own Plaintiff's Exhibit 7, Judge, says they use those to develop treatment plans, to develop the care of the patient, to analyze the patient, to see what's going on with the patient.
What evidence is there that the standard of care requires reliance on these records? That these records are to be kept as you indicated, that is, their rules prescribe. Even if their rules prescribe them, if they're not relied upon in the standard of care, why have them? I mean, what difference does it make? What evidence is there of the standard of care requires the maintenance and reliance upon these records?
We had no witness who said that there is a standard of care that requires that these records be maintained. What we did have was, as I said, Plans 6 and 7, where they say their own rules that we're supposed to be keeping this.
The rules require that the records be maintained. What evidence is there that the standard of care requires the use of these records as opposed to the maintenance, the making and maintenance of these records?
There was no witness who testified to those words, Your Honor.
There's no evidence of standard of care that requires
that
these records be maintained?
In terms of the maintenance of the records, you're correct, Your Honor.
So but when the jury answered yes, that the UTMB was negligent in keeping of files, records, and other documentation, there's no expert testimony setting a standard of care that is required in order to
comply with a, the requisite medical standard.
I will agree with you, but I've got to fill in a bug here.
Okay.
It's the third thing that I haven't gotten to, and why was there a failure to diagnose? You have a physical therapist who says that on, I think, the fifth day of fracture, x-ray recommended. Get a physician to do an x-ray. I asked Dr. Evans, upon such a recommendation being made, is it good medical practice to wait 5 days to order? And the answer was no. And I think that establishes the exact question you're asking. He established, Dr. Evans established there the standard of care. He said, yeah, you should wait 5 days after that type of recommendation.
The failure to take an x-ray, how do you plug that into the jury finding that you need to rely on in order to prevail?
Because
it refers only to files, records, and other documentation.
Because the recommendation was in the medical records, and they were ignored by the physician. It's just as similar as when you have a test result and you pass wrong information on to your client. Your patient is what that result is.
Did Dr. Evans testify that normally these records are, in the course of practice, these records are normally relied upon, such recommendations in the patient's history are relied upon to pursue a prescribed course of treatment or diagnosis?
He did not say that. What he did say is what I just repeated to Justice Corey.
So if the physical therapist had gone to the attending physician and said, you need to do an x-ray, and told him orally that you need to do an x-ray, and he'd say, well, no, not right now. Might have a different situation, but here it is. It's in writing. It's in the patient's medical history that is contributed to by a number of attendants. Orderlies don't write in them, I guess, but nurses and therapists do, and technicians do, physicians do. This is the proper ear. This is the evidence, the test result, the objective observation that a physician and attending medical people would rely upon in dealing with this particular patient. But nobody said that. And there's no evidence that that is what these records are used for. Is that what you're saying?
Other than in Plan 7, their own policies, you're correct, Your Honor.
Other than as established by their policies. And
right.
You can establish that they did not maintain these records as they were required to under their own rules and policy. But the question is, have you established that that really makes a difference?
I think with Dr. Evans' testimony, I have. When he says that when this type of recommendation, and it was a written recommendation by the physical therapist, that make an x-ray, is ignored for 5 days, that is not acceptable medical practice. False low standard of care. Evans clearly says that in his testimony. He's their man. Now, I totally lost my train of thought here. Excuse me.
Well, let me ask you a question. If all a plaintiff has to do in a Tort Claims Act case is to point to a paper here, a medical record that was involved, what is left of sovereign immunity in this context?
In the medical record?
Well, I guess I'll even expand that to say if a person who's injured as a result of the negligence of a governmental unit in Texas, if all they need to do is point to a piece of paper that was involved somehow in the transaction or treatment, what remains of governmental immunity?
First, if I can, I don't think my case is quite that broad. I think there should be some nexus between what you're complaining about in the medical records and what has happened. In my case, a misdiagnosis, a failure to diagnose because they didn't follow their own advice and they didn't commit the records.
So you would say that there has to be some causal connection between the document and the injury, as opposed to just being involved?
I believe so. An analogy I make is I believe there's some school bus cases in some of the lower courts. And I think one of them is where there's an assault on the school bus. and we use the Texas Tort Claims Act to say what was on a school bus as misuse of a school bus property. I'm not quite sure that gets, I don't think there's a causal connection quite there. And so in that case, I believe you'd be right. You could say, yeah, there's something left there. Also, when you get into your implementation of policy, the Terrell case, where the police officer didn't follow their own rules and regulations when he pulls out to pull over a speeder. And another example is that the ECHO case, or ECHO, E-A-K-L-E, that is still pending in this court. I believe that's a case where you're talking about policy decisions. How do you decide what are suitable homes for foster homes or adoption homes? And when you're talking about formulation policy, I think that's still viable. But when you've got a record that says something's going wrong with this person and you need to do something and you ignore that record, then yes, I think the state is liable and it's an actual cost.
Is there evidence in the record that there is a standard of care that requires nurses and others to record the patient's condition?
The closest I come to that, I'll say no, and the closest I come to that is Dr. Evans testified that, yes, it is. Dr. Evans and Dr. Capel, our expert, both testified that a traumatic event, such as what would cause this fracture, is a reportable event. One that under the joint accreditation standards, et cetera, is one which should be in the patient's records.
And there was evidence that it had not been recorded, the 24-hour period.
There's nothing there. I mean, Dr. Evans and Dr. Capel were both clear that Dr. Evans, first of all, said this was a traumatic event. It's not something where it just broke when the kid was laying in bed. Something happened to him, and it should have been reported. Evans says that. Their own policies say that, and in addition to that, Evans says that it should have been a reportable event.
And this is a suit against the hospital, not against the doctor.
Correct. It was a suit strictly against the hospital, and no individual physicians, care providers were made a party to the lawsuit.
Did you say that when his parents found him there crying, sitting in a wheelchair, the chair was broken?
There was a missing arm support on the right-hand side that was not there, and that was reported to the nurses.
That had been there previously?
That had been there when they left him there the day before. That was gone.
Counsel, is there anything in the record showing an attempt to depose Dr. Milner?
We were never able to get an address for Dr. Milner from UTMB. She had left the hospital. We had no address on her.
Trying to track her down to the licensing board of doctors, the Texas Medical Association, or some governing some.
She was not in the state of Texas, Your Honor. We went through the Texas whatever medical it was. She was not here, and I can't tell the court now, but I believe we did ask for the names and addresses of the person with knowledge of relevant facts, and she certainly would have been one of those. We did not get there. In closing, I think that consistent with Lowe, Salcedo, Robinson, and Petty, we do have here a case where these medical records were misused, that we have information that is missing, we have information which is recommendations of their own people that say, take some action, and they don't take it, and finally we have a gap in their records when there should have been something there by their own physician, Dr. Burke Evans. And Richard York suffered injuries because of that. I believe this court should affirm the Court of Appeals below. If there's any further questions, I'll entertain.
Anything further? Thank you, counsel.
Well, I will agree with Mr. Buckley that we've got a case in which the medical records have been misused. You bet we've got one of those. That's what makes this case so perfect to go back and address the issues that were brought up in Petty and to revisit Salcedo and try to clear up what has happened in the courts of appeals in this state since Salcedo was passed. This is a case in which there's plenty of evidence that there was negligence in the maintaining and keeping and using these medical records by the staff. plenty of evidence of writing down pain, plenty of evidence of missing medical records, plenty of evidence of lapses in documentation. But there's no evidence that that lapse in documentation or those medical records were the cause of the injuries in this case. This statute says, so caused by. And I think this case is perfect to give the court the opportunity to go back and revisit Salcedo. Since Salcedo, there's been a variety of cases out of the Court of Appeals in this state that have just willy-nilly determining these cases on a case-by-case basis. With the Court of Appeals saying that it must be a proximate cause of the injury, the Court of Appeals saying property must cause it, the Court of Appeals, third Court of Appeals here saying that property need only be involved in the injury.
While that may or may not be the case, this is the same Salcedo case that in your initial argument you told me was so far afield from this case that it could be squared with Salcedo.
I agree. I think this particular case on its facts is far afield from Salcedo simply because they waived an essential element of the cause of action. But I think this case provides the court with the opportunity that I believe they were looking for in Petty to go back and revisit Salcedo and to go back and try to clear up some of the problems that Salcedo has caused in this area of the law.
If you're wrong on the evidentiary issue that you said we could narrowly decide this case upon, do we need to get to this more fundamental issue of causation that you raised in Salcedo and Petty?
I think so. I think that the problem in this area of the law, the problem with the Tort Claims Act, and the problem we're having in the application and interpretation of these waivers.
What's the injury here? Is it the broken hip or is it the failure to diagnose and properly treat the broken hip?
That's a good question. The injury is the failure to diagnose and properly treat the broken hip.
Because, obviously the record didn't cause the broken hip.
That's correct.
But a failure to use a properly documented record might well result in a failure to properly diagnose and properly treat.
That's correct.
And might result in a lot of pain and anguish for the injured person.
The injury here is the failure to diagnose.
Here it resulted even in apparently a retrogression in his status. He was improving and was admitted to this program at UTMB because after other injuries, his mental and physical capacities were apparently rapidly improving, so they admitted him to this program, and then there was a regression after this injury. He refused to eat, he did not improve, and they kicked him out of the program.
That was the evidence that their expert put forward. That's correct.
Not because of the injury, but because...
Not because of the injury.
The suffering is a consequence that was undiagnosed and untreated.
In fact, the evidence is that the injury in this type of a situation is not negligence. And so the injury in this situation is the failure to diagnose. And again, the failure to diagnose, however, did not involve, even at its extreme, any use of tangible personal property. There's no evidence that there was a use of tangible personal property in this case. Mr. Buckley suggested that Dr. Evans said something along the lines of, would it be proper to or improper to not follow this recommendation for an x-ray? And of course he said, yes, it would be improper. But what Mr. Buckley didn't say and what he sort of glossed over is that Dr. Evans, there's no evidence that indicates that Dr. Milner went and looked at the record and got her order for an x-ray there and said, here, this patient, somebody's asked that I look at him to see if they need an x-ray. I think I'll go do that. There's no evidence that that's the case. No evidence that this recommendation in the record was ever read by Dr. Milner, and no evidence that that caused her to go down there and look at this gentleman. She showed up down there, looked at this guy, went in, looked at him without any evidence that she used the record, and determined that he didn't have a fractured hip. Determined he didn't need an x-ray. Looked at him on five different occasions, and on each occasion determined he didn't have a fractured hip.
Never looked at the chart?
There's no evidence that she ever did.
And you're arguing that he's failed to prove that standard of care required that she looked at the chart. He's arguing that even if she had looked at the chart, that the lack of documentation in the chart may not have resulted in the appropriate course of treatment.
Well, we'll never know. Yeah. Because nobody ever asked Dr. Milner whether these additional items would have made a difference in your diagnosis.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Well, that concludes the argument in the first cause. The court will take a brief recess.
The audience is here, Rod.